with the mountain off the back. You in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet fuck a name and the fame. Only legacy remains. Remember the name, Aljamain Sterling. It ain't motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? We are back. I know a little later than expected, but I've been on like a little bit of a victory tour, just kind of hanging out and enjoying the downtime a little bit. So let's just get right into it. I'm very, very pleased with my performance over Cal McCater, tough, gritty dude who's been around the block. I think he's had four or five main event slots now at this point for the UFC. Some big, exciting fights, memorable fights. Very scary fight for myself, you know what I mean? With that said, in the beginning, in the octagon, completely transparent with you guys, I was not very pleased, not very happy, because deep down inside, the way I felt like I had an opponent who was able to stall me out in certain positions. And I'm not saying that I could have completely not have done anything. Like, I could have just tried to stand up and create something, right? But I worked so hard to get to those positions, the things that we drilled over and over to get there as cleanly as I did. Great takedown entries, dominating the position, transitioning, and then getting stuck in these positions where I'm getting stiff-armed in the head, trying not to allow me to advance to the back. Obviously, you're not going to do that, right? But then you're in a stalemate position where it's like, do I just let go of the position altogether and not advance to the back and try to reset the position all over again? Or does Calvin realize he's losing in that position and he needs to make something happen? It's a catch-22. It's a weird situation, weird sequences. I know people were trying to compare it to Khabib. Oh, when Khabib gets there, he does damage. Some things are just not created equal, and I think that's the easiest way to put it. Respect to Khabib. He's got a very, very stifling game, but a lot of the guys he's faced, I mean, whatever. I'm not even going to get into that. I think it remains to be said that when a guy does not want to get finished and wants to clam onto a position, it's a lot harder to get those finishes. And I know people are thinking, like, oh, you could have passed. I passed as quickly as I could pass. Try to advance positions where I could advance positions. But some positions were literally stuck. And I don't know. I tried to do it as best as I could. So just reviewing some of the tape, trying to go over some of these positions with some coaches, get some different minds and perspectives, and try to troubleshoot some of these scenarios and see where I can create openings, even if it's not the most advantageous for me to let go of the position, but we're in a stalemate kind of a thing where he doesn't want to move because he doesn't want to get ground and pounded. So he traps my arms, he throws his legs up, and he just locks me in. Okay, I understand that. You're in a fight. Who wants to get their head punched in while they're on the ground? Or who wants to turn their back to someone who's a specialist with taking the back, right? So I get all those tiny details. So I want to try to see, well, what else can we possibly create as a person who is in the position, who is offensive, but he's kind of stuck, you know? So I'm trying to figure out what is going to be the best way to advance those positions and still try to make it a little bit more exciting. Like, don't get me wrong. Our fight on that particular night of UFC 300 was not the most entertaining, but it was the most dominant fight I think you could have possibly looked at. From the entire card, from top to bottom, I think I'm arguably the top three most dominant on that entire fight card. So when you look at that, I think to keep it in perspective is you got a guy who's on average lands, I think, about four or five strikes per minute, like significant strikes, who was reduced to about 0.5 or something like that. Over 15 minutes. A guy who went tooth and nail with Calvin Kattar, a guy that went toe-to-toe with Giga Chikadze, arguably won against Josh Emmett, had a great performance against a guy who's knocking guys out left and right in Dan Ige, knocked out Shane Burgos, TKO'd Andre Feely, like, his resume of how dangerous he is goes on and on and on. So for me to use my skill set against his and to reduce him from being someone who's that dangerous to literally no threat whatsoever, I think it deserves a little bit of credit in that regards. Again, not the most exciting performance if you're just a striker's delight, but in terms of watching Calvin's specialty versus my specialty and seeing who is going to prevail, can Calvin land that kill shot? Can he land those big uppercuts or that front kick up the middle? Can he land that big cross or overhand that he's landed on guys and lifted Shane Burgos off of his feet with? Like, I watch this sport very, very closely. So I see all the damage. I see all the threats. And I just felt, based on looking at that, looking at the performance, when I got home, hung out with the friends, we watched the rest of the card because we were not missing the rest of that. We had to watch the BMF and see who was going to be the BMF for the night. And after that, I watched my fight. And I was a lot more pleased. Like, my whole entire mood changed. Like, I was in the octagon, I was mad. Now, let me explain why I was mad. I'm a super, super competitive person. And when you look at it from that lens, right, I want to become a champion. And I want to become a champion in another weight class, a bigger weight class. And if I can't do that, or I don't mean to say that, if I can't do better in a situation where I felt like, yeah, I got to dominant positions, but I couldn't do jack shit with it because my opponent was good enough to stalemate me, then how on earth am I going to beat a guy as dangerous as Ilya Topuria who can grapple his ass off? That's my mindset. That's my thinking. So I was very broken up about it because I'm like, well, what am I going to do? I'm just going to hang around, collect paychecks, and hopefully someone beats him and then hope that I get a chance. If I can stick around the top five long enough, maybe I'll get a crack at the belt. Maybe I'll get a chance to become a two-division champion. Just maybe. That's not the way I think. I'm thinking I want to be number one. If I'm going to be number one, I need to do better. And it's just a competitor in myself. And I said this on the Ariel Helwani show. Had I had lost that fight dominantly against Calvin, meaning he whooped my ass from pillar to pillar in there, I was just going to retire. There would be no reason for me to continue. I'm not going back down to 35. That's just not happening. Non-existent, non-negotiable, not happening. Not destroying my body like that again. And speaking of, I have the stats. I'm going to read this here in a bit to go over my weight composition, which we did the testing with the UFC. I'm going to send a copy to Jake so Jake can insert this into the screen so that you guys can kind of read along and see, like, this is no bullshit and half the stuff that I've been dealing with and why it's been as difficult and challenging for me to make 35 over the years. And hence why that turnaround and the one before this really, really killed me because it's just not easy doing that. Okay, so I go back, I watch the performance, much happier, way more delighted because, peep game, a lot of the stuff we drilled, I was able to implement almost every single thing that we drilled. The morning shakeout, the drill sessions on Wednesday at Extreme Couture, some of the scenarios that we did over at Syndicate MMA, and some of the stuff we did over at the PI, just working these things with Dean Thomas and with Dennis Bazookia, Tim Kwamba. There's just and Julian Rosa, we did a lot of good stuff, man. And to see all that come to fruition and see how effective it all was, bro, there's nothing better than that. It's like if you go home and you study for your exam and the exact way that you saw it and it came up and the exact way you remember it happened, and it's just like, oh, that's easy. Cakewalk. It was like that for me. In slow motion, watching him throw his jabs, slipping, getting out of the way, coming back with my feints and going over my counters. And I'm like, man, it's either this motherfucker is good or that drill session is good, good. You know what I mean? So I was super excited and happy about that internally. But I was a little bit annoyed with the grappling because I was like, mofo, if you don't do something and let me try to do something, what the hell? And notice in the third round where he actually did something where he reversed the position and he went for a takedown of his own, what happened? I'm in a position where this opportunity to do something. And I went on the defense, straight to the offense, picked him up, looking for my Undertaker pile driver tombstone that I teach in the MMA class back at Law MMA in Long Island. I've taught this move. Ask these guys. Literally have taught this move. When guys barrel in, you stuff the head, drive forward, and from there, it makes it so easy, and they are so defenseless when you get that chest wrap on them. And you can literally take them and carry their ass to the grocery store if you want, pick some stuff up, put it in a basket, walk out the store, check out, and then go back home, and then slam their ass on the ground. So with that said, I was much happier after watching back the performance a couple of times, and even from the very first time. I was like, man, that wasn't as bad as people were trying to say. They were trying to say, oh, if that was on any other fight night or any other pay-per-view card where there was some other grapplers and it looked like that, like I don't think anyone would have been so up in arms. The first round was fun, some excitement in that one, some scrambles. And then the round two and three is where, you know, I got the takedowns and Calvin Vicata chose to just hold on. So I don't know. Do you blame the guy who's playing defense the whole time when the guy on top position is trying to be offensive and can't? If you're not allowing me to posture up, what do you expect me to do? You know, so I don't know. Again, there could have been some position where I could have forced some action, but I would have lost the position altogether. So I'm taking ownership that I could have forced the action, but I would have lost the position altogether had I have done certain things. Maybe that would have created way more excitement. But would that have been the smartest route to victory, possibly getting this guy an opportunity to get back on his feet and maybe add to his strike count? I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like it was a pretty damn good fight and smart on my part. And I think it puts a lot of the division on notice of my capabilities in the grappling department and what I can do. And there's some good fights with that. So, again, that's what my performance. I felt like my energy level was better. My strength was better at 45. My rehydration was better. Fight day, I felt better. Like, yeah, I was in the back room. I was so, so nervous. And I don't think anyone was able to read it, but I had the craziest poker face. But I just needed a moment of clarity and some moments to myself where I could just reassure myself, like, hey, man, if things don't go your way, we're just going to hang them up. And no point or worth it for me to stick around after I've made my nut. I've accomplished what I want to accomplish in this sport already. We gave it a good run. But I told myself, but whatever you do, you are going to fight your freaking balls off the entire time. And you will not quit on yourself. And that was here for me, you know. So with that said, it was the most nervous I've ever been in the back room before any fight. And for rightful reasons, like I said, look at the fights that Calvin's had, man. He's put some beatdowns on some people, and he's willing to go there. I just felt like he was very frustrated. He didn't have many options. I know his takedown percentage was extremely high, but I think I did a pretty good job of doing my homework, staying dialed in, and a lot of the stuff that we saw on the tape, we were able to capitalize on that in training and make the most out of it, and that was able to transition and translate into the fight. And I think that's the new way people need to start training, not just going to like team practices. You need to be doing specific work, being selfish when you need to be selfish. And when it's time for you to return the favor for your training partners, you got to do that, man. That's the way it's got to be done. If you want to get growth, you want to have the best performances that you can, repetition, 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 and controlled. Not one guy getting their ego stroked and then feeling like, oh, you did a rep too hard, so now I'm giving you resistance, now we're sparring. Nah. You got to have that shit squared in and dialed away. And hopefully I could do more of my camps like this with a guy overseeing it. Because back in my majority of my UFC career, it was pretty much me overseeing most of it. And, you know, I would ask questions with the coaches and stuff, but it's never been like, you know, them sitting there and just watching the entire session and kind of going through the feedback with me. So to have some sessions where it's like that, where I could kind of point some teammates, like, guys, I need emphasis on these certain things. This is what I want it to look like. Can we make sure this looks like this? And if it doesn't, please say something. Stop it. Correct it. Tell me what you're seeing. And I think that's where you make those gains. I credit guys like Ilia Topuria, his training camps, Henry Cejudo, Sean O'Malley. I forget some of these other guys, like a Francis Ngannou, John Jones. A lot of these guys, they tailor their camps around them. A Bo Nickel. And when you could do that, you get the most out of your training sessions. and the most out of your partners, the most out of your body, and the most out of your time. Because time is something we do not get back. And you have to make sure you are investing the best parts of you that you can to get the most out of it. Capish? You understand what I'm saying? Capish? With that said, with the weight, so transitioning, how about Max freaking Holloway? Insane fight. And when I say insane fight, I'm really talking about the highlight reel of a century in terms of the ending. That ending was so cold. It's just the flying, jumping wheel kick that Gaethje throws at him. He gets up. Max points to the center. Tell him, let's go. They start swinging. And then he points back to center. No, let's stay right here. Start swinging. They go slinging leather. And then Max goes almost like a shoe shine. Pop, 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 pop. Boom. Right hand over the top of Gaethje's left. Does not see it coming. Clean on the chin. Puts him out. That is unreal. That is some bad mother effort. That's some bad mother effort shit right there. Like, nobody can say anything about that. Now, it gets interesting. Because what is the point of Max Holloway going up to 140, 155 to fight arguably the guy who should have been fighting for the belt against Islam Makhachev? Justin Poirier is fighting for the belt, obviously. So, Justin beat Poirier. He rolled the dice, took a fight with Max that he did not need to take, right? Pretty much had a guaranteed title shot. As far as I'm sitting, he was next in line. He beat the guy who's now getting the title shot in a crazy fight. So when you see that, he's rolling the dice. He's got all the risk. Max beats him. Why is Max going to go back down to 45? Yeah, I get it. You're a bad motherfucker. Yeah, you're going to do what you're going to do, right? I get that, Max. But my thing is, well, you beat the next guy. You're next in line. So what happens? Do you fight to Poirier? And if you win, do you stay there? Or do you say, I'm going to go right back up to 55 because I got some unfinished business of where I left off? So it's a very interesting thing. I'm just trying to make sense out of it. Like, what is the game plan here? What is the play? Obviously, the Topuria fight is a big fight for Max Holloway. 145-pound king, probably the GOAT of 145, in my personal opinion. I mean, you got Volkanovski. I guess that's kind of a tough one. But then you got Volk against Yair, Volk against Ortega, Volk against Max three times. But then you got Max who beat Edgar, he beat Aldo, he beat Ortega, he beats, and then he's going on that crazy, I mean, they're both like, they're right, I guess they're neck and neck, but then I guess you could make the case for a prime Jose Aldo at 145 too. All right, so I don't know, scratch that. But you got one of the best guys to ever do it at featherweight. Like, where do you go from here? Like, this fight, it sells crazy. You don't need to tell anyone. You obviously going to promote it, but you don't need to do much promotion because the fight sells itself. Ilia Topuria, huge overseas in Europe and probably huge over here in the States now, I would imagine. Fought in Anaheim, California, big audience. A lot of stars were out for that, so I'm pretty sure he's a rock star in the States as well. And then you got Max Holloway, who's a fan favorite, loved and adored all across the world. I can't see how this pay-per-view couldn't sell at a minimum 700,000. Minimum. And if people decide to stream it instead, shame on you, man. This is a fight you should pay for. If there's any people out there who put it on the line, it's a Max Holloway, it's an Ilia Topuria who walks the walk, talks a big talk, but walks it. This is the fight you pay for. You guys all pay for the Conor McGregors and having him do blockbuster numbers. This is a fight you gather up with your boys and you pay for the damn pay-per-view and support these guys, you know? They're going to give you a crazy good fight. And, of course, the other people on the undercard, they don't really get anything of that. But I think it's a fight that deserves, even if it's a one-off like boxing, how they usually have just the one fight that's really good. I think at a minimum 700,000 buys. And I think if all these people who claim to be super fans of these guys, if you are, put your money where your mouth is and support them. You know what I mean? It's a huge title fight. Great opportunity for both guys. to showcase who they are again. And if Topuria were to beat a guy like Max Holloway, and if he were to finish a guy like Max Holloway, whoo, child, that puts him in a whole different league. And the talk on the interwebs is getting a little spicy, and I like that. I like when there's a little bit of banter, man. It just makes it more entertaining, more fun to watch, and someone's got to eat their words. That's all it's about for me. It's all competition. Both these guys want the same damn thing, and only one of them could come out on top. And that's what I love about this sport. It's so crazy. It's wild. It's scary. But there's the excitement and the thrill of it is just is second to none, man. I can't think of any other sport that's as exciting. Boxing is cool, but I think at the highest level of MMA, it's – and even the low levels, man, there's just so much more action. So there's so many different ways to win, so many different scenarios. Guy coming back at the last second of a fight, getting knocked out. Come on, man. Come on. Where does that happen? No other sport is like that. Like, yeah, you got a buzzer beater jumper or Hail Mary maybe in the end zone at the end of a game in overtime, something like that. But in terms of just crazy excitement, I don't think it gets much better than this, man. Two people just going at it, and that's it. So to answer your question, Jake, I don't know if this does a million buys. I mean, in my personal opinion, it should. It's worthy of a million buys. Between the two of them and their fan base, it should be able to generate a million buys. It's just whether or not people are going to go out there and stream the fight and say that, go up to your signing and tell you they're fans and they buy all your pay-per-views when they're streaming it, right? It's just so crazy sometimes the way people could be. Real quick. Next up. So next up we have Brian Ortega versus Mosar Evloev in terms of who I would like to fight next. Both of these fights are a grappler's delight. If I were to fight Ortega, he's a guy, if you take him down, he ain't going to hang out on his back. He's looking for triangles. He's looking for arm bars off of his back. He's looking for Kimuras. He's looking for up and over sweeps, oompas. He's looking to jump guillotines. He's doing it all. Flying triangles. He does it all. You got Mosar Evloev, mostly just grappling, gets to that Dagestani position that they're mostly known for, where they get behind you. They kind of just lock their hands and hang out there. But if they get to triangle your legs and beat you up, then they take advantage and they grind you down until you're like nothing. Very tough matchups, both of them. I think that my wrestling would easily go toe-to-toe with Evloev. Easily. I don't think there's any difference in how good his wrestling is compared to mine. I don't know if he has a judo or sambo background. That could maybe add a little bit of a wrinkle to the game. But some of the guys he's grappled with, I've grappled with them. And I like to think even when I'm out of shape and have grappled with those guys, I'm pretty competitive, right? So that's just my honest assessment. That would be a head-to-head fight where it's just whoever gets the takedown first, it might even end up just being like, you know what? We don't want to, either one of us doesn't want to exert too much energy into grappling. Maybe Evloev and I just end up standing up. And then I can see something very similar with myself and Brian Ortega where it's like, well, I'm not trying to let you take me down. Well, I think my wrestling would eventually just take him down, and it would just be one of those things where maybe Brian is forced to stand with me in a sense where he's looking for more big shots because the takedown just keeps happening. So I can see that possibly happening, or maybe he's got his takedown defense so locked away where if I were to shoot something, he's able to catch me in some type of guillotine, create a scramble, and maybe he takes my back. And then we're in a position where maybe I lose the rest of the round or I get caught in a submission. There's so many possibilities with the grappling aspect of things, and that's what I like about both those fights. If you're going to ask me which fight do I want, give me Brian Ortega. He is the highest ranked guy, not named Max Holloway and not named Alexander Volkanovski. I beat him. I think it puts me automatically in a position where I get to fight for a title. Like, obviously, if I had put away Calvin Kattar, I think my name would have been tossed in the hat for a potential title challenger just because the things are just so unclear right now. The only other guy but who hasn't fought in so long and then avenged his loss to Yair Rodriguez is Brian Ortega. He's a clear front runner if Max Holloway is not coming back down. But from all the banter, all the hype, all the talking, all the speculation, it looks like Max is going to be making his way back down to 145. So I say, give me the next best guy, because the way I like to do things, I like to show that things should be earned in life and not given. Given is cool. Like, if you get given something, take full advantage. I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. But I come from a blue-collar working home. I've been working since I was 13, 14, hustling while I was in school and trying to make a buck as best as I can. And that's the best way I can explain it. So I'm going to put my nose down. I'm going to get back to the grind. And hopefully I get that opportunity to share the octagon with one of the best to ever grace the octagon with submissions, fighting for the belt in Brian Ortega, and may the best man win. So, again, that's who I want, Brian Ortega. Give me the next best guy so I can remove all doubt. If he's the next highest ranked, if it's going to be Evloev takes his position, then give me the next ranked guy. And, you know, I win. I get the job done. I think that makes me undeniable. And that's the way I like to go about things in my career. Earned, not given. With that said, I do believe the UFC should start doing more big cards like UFC 300. I know it's not the easiest to do that, to get champs, multiple champs on the same card, getting everyone to the card healthy. I don't think anyone fell out from the fight card from UFC 300 except for the Jalen Turner, not the Moicano. I think there was an original opponent for that, for Moicano, and then Jalen Turner stepped in, if I'm not mistaken, or I could be completely wrong and maybe it was them the whole entire time. But either way, I think it makes for an excitement for the fans to just, like, if you're going to do a couple of weak cards so that you can save some talent for a really stacked card, man, that's crazy. That's crazy. I would love to see nothing more than that, where you get a couple of ranked fighters, maybe like a card with 10 ranked fighters in the top 5 or top 10 matched up. That's crazy, man. That's some good star power. That's some good energy for the card. And I think it just gets the fans really, really excited about wanting to tune in and wanting to watch. So that's my take on that. And just to recap, right now I'm getting ready. We're gonna head out on vacation to Turks and Caicos. I'm not afraid of telling people where I'm going to go. I'm not gonna tell you exactly when I'm gonna go. But I'm going on vacation to Turks and Caicos. So hopefully when we do get down there, we get some accommodations. I put out a post. I'm going to put out another one to get a couple more recommendations on where we should go. It's only going to be for about 4 or 5 days, I think. If we want to extend, we might end up just staying a little bit longer, depending on how the trip is going, our energy levels, if we feel like we need to maybe get some other stuff done that we need to get done back home. I don't know. We'll see. We're just going to kind of play by ear. But right now, we're expecting 4 or 5 days with the option to extend a little bit longer if we want to. I've always heard about Noah's Ark and some other places like the Conch and some other things like that, Aziza. So we're going to try to hop around. I'm excited to go jet skiing, going to clear waters. I'm going to take a picture in a clear boat because I know only the females do that shit, but I don't care, man. I need a picture in the clear waters. In the clear boat, because that's a fire picture. I'm going to try to have me a nice cigar hanging out in my beach attire. Just trying to look like Mr. Cool, man. That's it. I'm just trying to enjoy life while I can. We got one life to experience. I'm trying to experience this shit as best as I can. So that's my thing with that. I should be back in New York the first week of May. So, guys, if you're around, I might pop over to McGorry's, RC Dugan's, and maybe a couple of my other spots that I like to go to. Definitely need to get back to Vincent's Clam House. That food is so good. And what else? Aljamain Sterling Day is May 23rd. And guys, sorry for the delay. We had some issues with Funk Harbor, so I want to make sure I'm giving a transparent update. You guys know I'm always trying to be honest with you. We had some hiccups with some things. We're supposed to be ready. The bottles are actually ready for sale. There's some behind the scenes stuff that we have to take care of and get that ironed out before we continue to go forward, before we can start accepting money from customers. Otherwise, that just creates a muddy and messy situation. So without saying too much, I don't want to give away too much because I don't know how much I can actually talk about. So with that said, the bottles are here. They are done. We just have a couple of things we got to sort out. And once we get it sorted, we'll be good to go. So please hang tight. Bear with me. I know this was supposed to be out since last year. Again, some of these things are just completely out of my control. And on my end, I try to do everything as best as I can. All I can do is relay the information that I've been given. And I'm just along for the ride. because I don't control the logistic part of things. So hopefully things get sorted sooner rather than later, because I'm telling you, this bottle, this first edition bottle, we're going to be doing collector's items seasonal, so they're going to change. I'm telling you guys right now, this is going to be something that people are going to love. If you like rum, if you like anything that has a hint of bourbon, you're going to enjoy this, man. So I'm telling you right now, just wait on it. And with that said, thank you guys for tuning in. Shout out Nerd Focus for always supporting me. Nerdfocus.com. Go check them out. Or on Amazon.com. You can get them shipped over to you. One of the best energy drinks out there. Nootropic energy drink. Thanks, guys. Peace and love. See you guys soon. Let's go. Turks and Caicos. Turks and Caicos.